Right, here we are back again. Didactic Mind, episode 11, New Year's Irresolutions. Welcome to all of my loyal readers. Your patronage, as always, is deeply appreciated, as is your loyalty, which is a defining feature of the readership of my blog. Many of you have been reading my stuff for, in some cases, 3 or 4 years, maybe longer. I think Dire Badger, for instance, has been a reader of mine for about 5 years now, something like that. Now that the blog is in its 8th year of existence, I am privileged to have some really cool people reading my blog, some really interesting characters, many of whom are much smarter than I am and who have much more interesting stories to tell than me. And some of whom have gone off and started their own blogs on their own, inspired in part by my example, which I think is really gratifying to hear every time I hear it, certainly. A very warm welcome to my SoundCloud listeners, those of you who have subscribed. If you have not subscribed, please make sure you do. Hit the subscribe button, that way you will never ever miss a new upload. And if you are new here, well, most welcome to you as well, and I do hope you become a subscribed member of this podcast, and stop by the blog, as always, if you want to read more from me, because I do believe I am better in written form than spoken word, simply because all these ums and ahs and pauses, they don't exist in the written medium. And of course, you don't have to listen to me drinking water every few minutes when you're reading my thoughts. But I did want to take some time to convey my thoughts about this particular time of year, New Year's, you know, the first week or so of the new year. This is always the time when everybody makes up his mind to go and do something, to change something. It's a great time to reset, to take stock, to say, what did I accomplish in the year before? Oh, it wasn't actually all that much. Okay, so I'm going to change a bunch of stuff and do something different this year. Okay, we call these New Year's resolutions. Now, I'm here to tell you today, New Year's resolutions don't mean jack shit. And they are totally irrelevant to your life. And I'll explain why. A resolution without a plan is just a wish. And if wishes were horses, all beggars would ride. Or, as the alternative goes, if wishes were fishes, all beggars would eat, or something like that. Point is, everybody wishes for something. Everyone wishes his life was better in some way. The short man always wishes he was taller. The poor man always wishes he was rich. The rich man always wishes he was more popular. The beautiful girl always wishes she wasn't afflicted with, you know, douchebags who only want sex from her. The ugly girl wants to be beautiful. The fat girl wants to be thin. The thin girl wants to have big boobs. The girl with big boobs wants smaller boobs because they hurt her back. And so on and so forth, etc., etc., ad nauseam. If you have a resolution, which is to say, if you have some vague goal kicking around in your mind, such as, yeah, it'd be really nice if I could lose weight. Okay. How are you going to do it? You don't have a plan to do it. You don't have any mapped out approach to doing this. You don't have any structure to it. Which means that all you have is a wish. And if all you want to do is wish, then fine, that's up to you. But you're never going to get where you want to go in life because you're just wishing for things to happen. It's not going to happen without you taking firm action to do it. It's never going to happen unless you sit there and you plan it out and you say to yourself, okay, this is my goal. This is what I want to do. These are the 3 to 5 to 10 things that I want to achieve by the end of 2020. Okay? That's it. That's what you have to do, and that's, you have to have at least some kind of roadmap in your head of how you're going to do these things. I'm going to walk you through a few specific examples. I'm going to tell you over the course of the next 45, 50 minutes or so what I want to achieve in this year and what is important to me. So let's start with a New Year's resolution that pretty much everybody has at some point or another. I want to lose weight. I want to get fit. I want to get lean. I put on 20 pounds. I'm not happy with the way I look, so I'm going to go in and go to the gym. And, you know, I'm going to take up a gym membership and see where it goes. Oh, really? Okay. Fine. You know. So this is January, the first 2-3 weeks of January especially, were always the time period where I would just dread going into the gym in the evenings. You know, I lived in Jersey City for, how long? 2011 to 2018, so 7 years. I lived a long time in Jersey City, in New Jersey, USA. The nice part of Jersey City. For those of you who have never been to Jersey City, there are like two bits of it. There's the nice part, which is downtown Jersey City, which is really nice. I mean, it's one of the nicest towns in the country, in my opinion. And then there's the Heights, which are just awful. They're just shit. It's a shit town. You don't want to live in the Heights, but it's cheap there, so most people live in the Heights. If you live, as I did, in downtown Jersey City, then you would have been able to see the nice restaurants and the cool cafes and the trendy coffee bars and the live music spots and the gyms and the, you know, quiet neighborhood walks. And it was diverse, but it wasn't like so diverse that you'd have drive-by shootings every other day. It wasn't full of there was a fairly strong Black contingent and a fairly strong Hispanic contingent, but they started getting pushed out as more and more millennials came in, you know, white working class, or I should say white managerial types came in working on Wall Street and moved to Jersey City to take advantage of the cheaper rents. So I lived there for a long time, and I went to a fantastic gym that operated out of Jersey City for several years until very sadly it closed down. Not because it went out of business, it was just because the owners of the property wanted to do something else with it. And I was really, really pissed to find out, you know, years later, or a year later, before I had to leave the US, that what they'd done with it was essentially converted into a freaking dance studio. I mean, that really stuck in my craw, because this gym was really fantastic. I loved it. It had everything I wanted. It had great powerlifting equipment, great cardio equipment, you know, a heavy bag in the basement downstairs next to the washing machines and the dryers. I loved the place. For me, it was a haven. It was a sanctuary. I mean, the owner of the gym could literally set his watch by the time that I got in the evenings. Every single Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, he could set his watch based on what time I would get in and what time I would, well, you know, not what time I'd get out, but like, what time I would show up. You know, oh, it's 7 o'clock, or this guy, you know, Didac just walked in the door. Oh, it's 7 p.m. He doesn't even have to look at his watch. You know, it got to that level. Every January, the first 2 weeks of January, I and all of the other gym rats, you know, all the meatheads who'd been lifting for a long time and been attending the same gym for years, would just look in dread as we would see so many numbnuts come in and just have no freaking clue what the hell they were doing. And they would come in, clog up the equipment, look like idiots, and they would just do stupid shit that they absolutely did not understand. They had no clue how to use the equipment. They had no idea what they were doing. They were doing exercises that were dangerous for them. And they were doing them without proper form, without proper advice. Fortunately, we always thought to ourselves, well, okay, I mean, they'll be gone after 2 weeks, you know, a month at the outside. By mid-February, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be calm. It'll all be back to normal. We don't have to worry about these idiots again. Now, the thing is, one of those idiots could well be you, okay? One of those idiots could well be you. And I'm not saying this because I want to discourage people from going to the gym. Quite the opposite, in fact. I think that as a man, you should be trying to maximize your strength and maximize your conditioning in every way possible. So if you decide to go to the gym, hey, in all honesty, in all seriousness, sincerity, that is a fantastic thing. And you have my full support. I am delighted if you take, if the message that you take from this podcast is, I need to go to the gym and I need to do it properly. But then you're going to be wondering, okay, how do I do it properly? Well, in my case, I mean, I learned how to lift by basically watching Mehdi Hadim's Strong Lifts 5x5 program. And I started applying it in the gym. But I didn't do it as a New Year's resolution. I started lifting in earnest in like June of 2011. So I've been lifting seriously for 8.5 years. I know what I'm doing. I know what my limits are, and I know how to lift properly. But there was a time when I was a newbie too. I was a complete noob. I mean, I was greener than snot in the gym. I didn't know what I was doing. And I remember 6 months earlier, you know, January 2011, I tried deadlifting for the first time. And I was, you know, I tried deadlifting 225 pounds in a different gym in New York City. And I blew out my back really badly. I was in so much pain that whole day. I didn't do it again for another 6 to 8 months. The reason was because I had no clue what proper technique was, and I tried lifting 225 pounds, having never deadlifted before, and I had no clue how to do it. So, of course, my back was in tremendous pain after that. And that's what typically happens to a lot of newbies. Either they come in and they get intimidated by the equipment, or they get scared by the dumbbells, or they don't know how to use the machines, or they get attracted to they congregate around the cable cross station, which always attracts all the gym bros and all the idiots who have no clue what they're doing. And they replicate, they look around and they don't know what to do, so they just make shit up as they go along. And they do stuff that's genuinely dangerous. And then they give up after a while because it's not making them any it's not giving them any progress, it's not easy for them, it's a totally new habit that they have to learn. And they don't enjoy it. So they leave. And that's an entire year's gym membership wasted in the space of a month. What was the point of that? You know, what was the point of making that resolution and then putting in all that effort, which wasn't really very much, and seeing it all go to waste? Here's how you really change your life when you go to into the gym. You don't say to yourself, I want to lose some weight, or I want to lose some fat. Here's how you do it. First thing you do, you get on a scale. You get on a weighing scale and you figure out what is your weight. Next thing you do, you take a tape measure and have, you know, a friend of yours measure you from the very top of the back of your head to your feet. How tall are you? You divide your weight by your height squared, and that gives you your body mass index. Now, I know the BMI is a flawed indicator. I know this, okay? For guys like me who carry a fair amount of muscle mass, it's not a good indicator because my BMI says that I'm significantly overweight. It's like 20, 27, 28 almost right now because I'm about 83 kilos and 177 centimeters, 85 kilos actually right now most likely. So according to that, if I go to calculate my BMI, My BMI would say that I am overweight, quite a bit, in fact. So I'm 5'10" and, that's what, 177 centimeters and, 85 kilograms. Compute BMI, 27. So I'm overweight. Okay. Now, I'm not lean. That's for sure. But I'm also not unhealthy. I'm in excellent shape compared to most people my age. Why? Because I carry around a fair amount of muscle mass. The same is not going to be true of a new lifter, someone who isn't carrying around a lot of weight, a lot of muscle mass. If your BMI is 30 or higher, you need to lose weight before you set foot in the gym. If your BMI is between 25 and 30, then you can benefit a lot from a proper strength and conditioning program. Okay, so now you know what you need to do. You have a couple of choices. Which one do you follow? If you're obese, you need to shed some poundage before you even step into the gym. How do you do that? Number one, by getting your eating under control. Number two, by going out for long walks every single day. You see what I'm aiming at here. Having a resolution is not enough. Having a goal is more important, but most important is having a plan and then executing on that plan. So if you're obese, get out there, lose 10 pounds, lose 20 pounds, lose however much it takes by cutting out the refined sugars, by cutting out the carbohydrates and all the other useless shit that you put into your mouth. Don't consume it anymore because it's not good for you. And it's going to be hard. It's hard work. It's miserable for the first couple of weeks when you don't have those carbs in your system and you're eating mostly lean protein. You know, you're eating basically chicken or beef or fish. It's not much fun because you miss the taste of those sweet sugary snacks. You miss the taste of Cocoa Puffs in the morning with milk. You miss the Twinkies and the Kit Kats and all the other crap that you were shoving in down your pie hole. But you have to do it. And that's where people get tripped up constantly. They keep trying to do these things without having a plan in place and without having some sort of list of, you know, milestones to follow. But the moment that you actually set out your goals in a concrete way and you say to yourself, okay, my goal is to lose 20 pounds of fat by, you know, in 3 months' time. So it's 1st of January right now, or today it's, you know, the 5th of January. By the 5th of April, I will have lost 20 pounds of fat. Okay, measure it. You want to measure it every single week. You want to list down exactly how you're going to go about doing that. By cutting out complex carbs, by cutting out the sugars, by going for walks, by increasing your moving heart rate, you know, your active heart rate when you're on your feet and moving around, by being more active in general, by getting more fresh air, by taking the stairs up to your office in the morning instead of the lift, by doing these small little actionable changes that add up to changing your life, not by making one huge change that you're never going to be able to deliver on, never going to be able to commit to. A wish without a plan, or a resolution without a plan, is a wish. That's all it is. And if you go into 2020 with just a bunch of wishes, you're not going to get anywhere. Let's take that example a little bit further and look at what happens to a lot of lifters who get into the gym and start picking up the iron and abandon it because they don't know what they're doing. They get hurt, they get demotivated, they get frustrated, they get tired, they see that they're not making the gains. Why is that? Because they watch some YouTube video of some schmuck on Instagram lifting weights and showing off his, you know, ripped abs and saying, you know, buy my supplement or buy my program or buy, you know, follow my Instagram feed or YouTube channel. And just because you do that, you'll have everything you need in order to get shredded, get ripped. There's one particular moron called Tyrone Essex. He calls himself the fitness addict on Instagram, and on YouTube. And I mean, he's just, guys like that, guys like Vince from V-Shreds, guys like girls, women like Gracie Ann Barboza, so many of these Instagram and YouTube e-celebrities promise you that if you just take this supplement or do this workout routine, you're going to look like them. You're going to look amazing. Well, okay, look. 99% of the time, you're not going to look like that. You're not going to look like a Mr. Olympia after 3 months of following some sort of workout plan. You're not going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger did back in the day by taking somebody's creatine or protein supplement. It's not going to happen, okay? you're not going to change your life that dramatically. But if you follow a structured, carefully detailed, measured, tracked workout plan, you're going to see your results go through the roof. You're going to start doing things you never imagined possible. If you start doing a proper workout plan, like a 5x5 daily strength training program, such as what Mark Ripito had to offer in his Starting Strength program, or Mehdi Hadim has to offer in his Stronglist 5x5 program, you're going to see rapid increases in your strength and conditioning and power over a very short period of time. Why does it work? Why do these methods work and all the other fitness celebrity, you know, quick fix bullshit? Why doesn't that work? It's real simple. Those workout plans are structured, regimented. They're designed by nature to give you a habit. What you really want to aim for when changing your life is not to make a drastic or dramatic change, because you're not going to be able to stick to it most of the time. Most people don't have the willpower. They don't have the ability to just stop cold turkey or change something immediately. It takes a truly traumatic event in their lives to get to that point. What's going to happen instead is you're going to build up habit day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. In my own case, I've gotten to the point now with my gym routine that I can feel like complete shit. I mean, I can feel just awful. I can have had a bad argument with my parents or a disagreement with my lady, or just feel completely unmotivated, depressed, miserable, tired, you know, sick to my stomach of being in a shitty situation, as I am in many ways. And you know what? I'll still go down at 11 o'clock in the morning, even though I hate working out in the mornings. I always prefer to work out in the evenings. The schedules where I am right now make it impossible to do that. So I'll go at 11 a.m. I'll go eat a couple of eggs. I'll brush my teeth. I'll get in the car. I'll go to the gym. I'll endure the bumpy-ass ride to get to the gym, half an hour, 40 minutes of miserable traffic, lousy roads, great discomfort, every single day, 5 days a week, so that I can get to the gym, so that I can work out. You want to get to the point where, as our beloved and dreaded Supreme Dark Lord, peace be unto him, Vox Dei, has said in a couple of his dark streams, there was an occasion many years ago where he was just not feeling it. His body was beaten up because he'd been doing a lot of sparring, he'd been doing a lot of lifting, he was just tired. He knew he needed to rest his body. He got into his car, turned the keys of the ignition, started driving, and the next thing he knew, despite the fact that he said to himself, I'm not going to the gym today, next thing he knew, the next conscious thought that he had was of parking in the parking lot of his gym and getting out his gym bag. And then he realized, oh, wait a second, I'm at the gym. Huh. What am I doing here? Oh, well, since I'm here, might as well put in a workout. That's the level of muscle memory or reflex that you want to, like, it becomes completely unconscious. You just go. That's what you want to build to. And it's going to take time. It'll take years to get to that point. It's taken years for me to get to that point. But that's where you need to get to the point where, you know, you actually feel bad. You feel like something's not right if you don't go to the gym. You feel that something's like really messed up if you don't go. That's what you want to aim for. That is a far cry from a resolution, a vague resolution to lose weight. That is the result of a lifetime's worth of hard work. And you get there by having a plan. So how do you get a plan? I mean, let's say, you know, somebody listening to this wants to start lifting, wants to figure out how to get strong, but doesn't know where to start. Well, You start with the three basic exercises, squat, bench press, deadlift. That's it. That's all you need. But if you want to add in a couple of accessory lifts or a couple of, different things to change things up a bit, there are a few exercises that you can throw in. You could use pendlay rows, which are basically barbell rows, you know, perpendicular rows from the ground. You can throw in chin-ups. You can throw in, once you get to a certain point of skill with squatting and deadlifting, you can throw in power cleans. You can throw in front squats, if you are so inclined. You can throw in overhead presses. I don't like overhead presses that much, partly because my shoulder's jacked up, mostly because it's too easy to cheat on the overhead press. So I prefer to combine that movement with something else, such as like a power clean or a clean and jerk sort of movement. But that's just my personal preference. Not everybody has to follow it. You know, that's just me. Let me describe for you the way I do things in the gym myself. Typical week, Monday, I mean, this is what I've had to adapt to now, living where I am. When I was living in the U.S., my routine was very different because I was doing both martial arts, serious martial arts, and powerlifting. But nowadays, since I don't do the martial arts portion anymore, because I can't, my week looks like this. Monday, I'll get in the gym and I'll do 40 minutes of just heavy bag work. I will put on wrist wraps and hand wraps and 16-ounce, not 14-ounce, but 16-ounce boxing gloves. And go pound on a heavy bag and do punches, elbows, knees, and kicks, Muay Thai style pad work, or bag work, basically, for about 20 minutes straight, I mean, without a break. And then I'll take a break for a few minutes, 5 to 7 minutes. I'll take off the heavy gloves and the wrist wraps. I'll put on lighter 7-ounce hybrid gloves. And I will concentrate on just smashing my shins into the bag for another 10 to 15 minutes. And then I'll just go like all out, you know, berserk on the bag for about 5 minutes. That is my cardio day. That's what I consider to be cardio. Okay. Tuesday, I'll get into the gym. That's a leg day for me. Tuesday, I'll get in and I'll do, 5 sets of 5 reps, of back squats. Then I will do a pyramid of deadlifts. So 5 at 225, 5 at 275. These are all pounds, by the way, not kilos. Let's just be clear about that. 5 at 275, 5 at 315, all without a belt. The first 3 sets are usually with overhand grip. And if I need to, on the 315 set, I will go to mixed grip. And then 365. For a set of 3, and 405 for a set of 1, with a belt and mixed grip now. Wednesday, that's chest day, so bench presses, or it's really upper body day, bench presses. I'll go in and I'll do a set of 5x5 at 185 pounds, and that's with, you know, pause reps. So I'll lower the bar to my chest, pause, push back up. And then I'll do 1 set of 3 at 195, 1 set of 2 at 205, 1 set of 1 at 215, and 1 set of 1 at 225. Then I'll dial it all the way back down, and I'll do a set of 10 fast reps with close grip at 135. And then I'll usually throw in some chin-ups, because I love doing chin-ups, and they are really good upper body exercises. These days I can do 17 chin-ups in a row without pausing. At peak fitness I can do 20. So that's, you know, all the way up, all the way down, just pure chin-ups. Thursday is kind of a hybrid day. It's what I would consider circuit training almost. I will do 5 sets of 5 of clean and jerks, so like a power clean and then just an overhead press almost of the weight. And back down, followed by, when I do 1 set of power cleans, clean and jerks, I will then follow it immediately with 1 set of barbell rows, followed by nowadays one set of five back squats with a very light weight, only 135. And I will do this, you know, for five sets. So one set clean and jerk, one set barbell row, one set squat, and maybe even one set of five chin-ups as well, if I didn't do chin-ups the previous day. So this is a very exhausting workout, but you get through it in about 30, 45 minutes, and you feel like you got your ass kicked, and that's good. You know, it's pure circuit training. And then Friday is heavy lift day. This is where I just try to max out my lifts. So I will do pyramid sets slowly, slowly, as long as it takes, up to the heaviest weight that I feel like my back and my body can take up until that point. Of barbell squats with a belt, with knee sleeves. I never use knee wraps. And then I will do deadlifts, and I will lift as heavy as I can. You know, I will do a set of 225, of five, a set of 315, of three, and a set of 405 at one. And then just keep adding weight at 405. And you know, eventually I might use chalk. And mixed grip, obviously. I mean, once I get to that kind of weight, I have to use mixed grip. Now, the point of all this is not to brag about how strong I am, because I'm not that strong. There are people listening to this podcast who can outlift me on their worst day of the week, okay? The point of this is to show you what my program looks like and why it's effective, because it's structured. There's a structure to it. There's a habit to it. There is a clear method to it. And it's adaptable. If I don't want to do something one day, I might just save it for another day, but that's fine. I don't have to be stuck doing this all my life. I don't mind doing it, but I don't have to be stuck doing this. Like, if I get back to a country where I'm able to do martial arts again, I will get rid of the heavy bag work and just do martial arts instead, doing actual proper striking. The point is that this is a program born out of years and years of habit and experimentation. And it didn't get there by being a New Year's resolutioner. It got there by having a plan, by having a clearly laid out, documented set of milestones that I could achieve, that I knew I could get done in a reasonable time frame. That's what a workout plan will give you, and that's how you're going to get strong. That's how you're going to achieve your goals. I'll give you another example, you know, leaving working out behind. A lot of you are going to have this this desire, this resolution to make more money. Okay, how? Well, I don't know, maybe I'll get a raise from my boss at work. Okay, what if he doesn't give it to you? Oh, well, I guess I'm screwed then. No, you're not. You're not screwed. You're just not thinking it through. Here's how you could, here's another way you could go about making more money. Instead of waiting for your boss to give you a raise, because he's not going to most of the time. I mean, look, the reality is we live in a world of deeply transient loyalties. Nobody gives a shit about their employees anymore, particularly big corporations. Everybody's basically just an interchangeable cog. You're not valuable to your employer. You're not interesting to your employer. You're not an asset to be invested in. If you work at a big tech company or a big bank or a big biomedical firm, they don't care about you as a person. They only care that you can do what they want you to do, that you can be a good little obedient corporate slave. And I know, because I was one of those guys for a very, very long time. I was a corporate slave for 12 years of my life. And I understood exactly what was required of me. I understood that what they wanted me to do did not require significant amounts of particular brilliance or intelligence. It just required the ability to follow instructions and the ability to solve specific problems that they wanted me to solve, which were in their best interests for me to solve. But it wasn't about doing what I wanted to do. It wasn't about achieving my goals. It was about achieving their goals. It was about making them happy, not about making me happy. They didn't care about me as a person. That's part of the reason why I was passed over for two promotions. That's part of the reason why I was let go. That's part of the reason why I lost my job and had to leave a very comfortable environment where I was really happy for a long time, because it didn't matter to them that they were basically destroying everything I'd built. It didn't matter to them. I didn't matter. The only person who's going to care about you is you, in the end. The only person who's going to fix, who's going to get what you deserve for you, is you. That's it. Nobody else gives a shit about you. The only other person, well, the only other thing that's going to care about you unconditionally and love you unconditionally, without ever asking anything in return that you can't give, is your dog. Everything else, every other human in existence in your life is going to want something from you, and if you don't deliver it, there are going to be consequences for you. So how do you deal with this? Well, here's one idea. You can start up a business of your own. Okay. That's a pretty terrifying prospect, isn't it? I mean, what if it fails? Okay. That's a distinct possibility. What if it does fail? All right, how are you going to ensure that you're going to be protected in the case of a failure? Well, here's where advice from a certain Donald Trump comes in very handy. I've been reading his book, The Art of the Deal, which is in my extremely long reading list. And I'm still in the early stages of it, because I've got like 5 different books that I'm reading, you know, surprise, surprise, all at the same time. One of the things that he talks about is limiting the downside. Take care of the downside and the upside will fix itself. And that is key. If you start up an online business, or if you start up, let's get to the online bit in a moment. If you start up a business and you say to yourself, okay, I want to start up a business and I want to do something simple and easy and replicable. Okay, that's the beginnings of a plan. This is a good thing. This is very good. You have the beginnings of something. Now, how do you go from that to actually having a business? First, you have to figure out something where the downside is limited, which means you need to set up something that is low cost and efficient and cheap to run. Look no further than my friend Kyle Trouble and his idea of a niche website. He's not the first to develop it. He's not even necessarily the best at it. He's just very good. His idea is really simple. You find something that you're interested in that you can create content about, that you can monetize. And then you create a small website that's cheap to run, doesn't require a whole lot by way of startup costs, and you use that to get clicks over to Amazon or AliExpress or eBay or any other e-commerce platform and get affiliate income from that. Or you write reviews about products that generate income from discount codes and partner codes that the suppliers and vendors of these products will give you to use for yourself. Or you create an ebook or a simple, you know, packaged product that doesn't take you a whole lot of time, but that is reasonably professional in nature and that looks good and is valued by members of a certain community. And you sell that. How much does it cost to get all this up and running? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Well, costs about $120 for a year, maybe 2 years worth of web hosting. So that's about $5 a month, $5 to $10 a month of web hosting. Okay. Depending on which host you get, hosting service, you can get unlimited sites. So, you know, you can build as many of these as you want. Setting up a good, professional, clean-looking theme for your website using WordPress plugins comes to about $50 to $70, one-off fee. Okay? So if you space that out over the course of a year, let's say, you know, you pay $60 for 1 year's worth of web hosting. You pay let's say $60 for a theme, how much are you spending per month on your business? In hard dollar terms, you're spending 10 bucks a month. That's it. That's all. All you have to do is make $10 a month and you've already broken even. Now, making those $10 a month may be challenging. Who knows? You may have picked a terrible niche. You may have a terrible product. You may not be good at writing. You may not have your site optimized in a way such that it will appear in Google search algorithms, because let's face facts, you need to engineer your keywords and your website titles in such a way that they routinely get picked up for Google search algorithm. If it doesn't, you're dead in the water. You're not going to be able to achieve anything. That, however, is all fixable. You can fix all of that. If you can scrape together $120 to $200 for 2 years, that's it. That's your initial investment to create yourself, for yourself, a small online web presence. That's it. If you can do that and make that commitment for 2 years, you have enough to, you have everything you need to get started. And now, let's say you do build out whatever it is you're looking to build and it starts being successful. It'll take maybe 3 to 6 months before you see any real traction. Now, guess what? All of the upside, all of it, is yours to own. Now, obviously, you have to pay the tax man and you have to incur a few other costs along the way, but they're not going to be huge. They're not going to be terrifying. They're going to be manageable. They're going to be maybe at most another 20 to 30% on the outside of all of the money that you make from this e-commerce venture that you've started. All right? That still leaves you, let's say if you start generating over $100 a month in income, you're still going to be left with $70 to $80 a month of pure profit. That's it's all yours. And you're not putting in a whole lot of work. And guess what? Now you can start using that $70 to $80 a month of revenue stream, of actually profit stream, of actual cold hard cash in the bank, to build on something else, to scale into another business. And while you're scaling up that business, your original business is still making money. It's still working for you passively. This is key. You're not going into it with a wish anymore. You've got a plan. You've got an approach. You've got things that you can do to build an independent life for yourself. But you're not going to get there without that plan. You're not going to get there without writing down, this is what I need to set aside in terms of costs. This is what it's going to cost me, so I need to set aside this money. This is what I can afford to lose on this business, so I'm going to set that aside. This is what I think I can make. This is what I plan to write. This is what I plan to produce. This is what I plan to link to. These are the places where I'm going to open up affiliate accounts. These are the things that I'm going to send out as my target audience. This is where I'm going to build my email list. This is how I'm going to, and you know, you see the pattern here. It's no longer, oh, I think I'm going to do this, or I want to do this, or I'd love to be able to do that. No. It's not about that anymore. It's not about resolutions. It's about achievements. It's about goals. It's about targets. It's about doing things. That's the difference. That's where you go from having New Year's resolutions, which are useless, to actually having something useful, tangible, to hold up as an achievement to the world and say, this, I did this. I achieved this. The moment you can move to that stage, that's when you realize you have done something wonderful with your life. You've done something good and useful and memorable. But until you get to that point, you're still just the guy making resolutions, you know? So let's talk a little bit about what some good goals, not resolutions, but goals are for your 2020. Let's say you, like I said, want to get fit and strong. Okay, find a workout plan. You don't know which one you want to choose? Send them to me. Get in touch with me. Let me take a look. I might end up charging you a fee for it. Hey, my time is valuable. Guess what? I have shit to do, as do you. But I know what I'm talking about when it comes to lifting. I know what I'm capable of. So when people come to me and say, does this workout process make sense? I might tell you, no, don't be freaking stupid. You're looking at doing CrossFit. I mean, what's wrong with you? You know, if anybody comes to me with CrossFit, that's exactly what I'm going to say. You're a moron. I'm going to tell you that's just idiotic. If you want to get injured, I mean, I'll break your back for you. I'll do it for a fraction of the cost of going to CrossFit classes for a year. But if you want to get strong by powerlifting or kettlebell exercises or bodyweight training even, great, wonderful. You know, pick up a set of P90X tapes or RushFit tapes and knock yourself out. Go for it, you know. But at least you'll have a plan. At least you'll have some tangible goal in mind that you can achieve. That's a good thing. Let's say you want to get better with girls. Okay. What are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to try online dating and I'll open up a dating profile on Plenty of Fitness. Dude, your return rates are going to be miserable in most of the continental US. If you try Tinder or Plenty of Fish or OkCupid or Bumble or any of these other, you know, dating apps and websites, if you're in a big city in the USA, yeah, it's going to be hopeless. Don't bother, okay? Actually get out there and meet people in real life. And for introverted guys, this is terrifying. I know. I've been there, okay? I know what it's like to sit there and think to yourself, okay, today's the day I'm going to go to a coffee shop and order a latte and sit there and talk to the first cute girl that I see making eye contact. I've been there. You know, I've been that guy who walks into a coffee shop, ordered a cup of coffee, and looked around and was like, I don't want to talk to anybody today. I don't want to do it. I don't see anybody interesting. I don't see anyone attractive. Everyone's looking at their phones or laptops. Excuse me. This is not something that I want to do with myself and with my life. I've been there, okay? It's not pleasant. Maybe you're going to need to travel and go overseas and meet girls that way. Because I can tell you, again, from personal experience, that if your response rates are terrible in the USA or in Western Europe, but you look like you've got your shit together, like you look like somebody who's a reasonably successful guy, you stay in good shape, you have a good photo of yourself that was taken of you, you look from your dating profile or from your social media accounts that like you have traveled a bit in your life and you have good life experiences, women in Eastern Europe are going to be all over you. You know, you open up a simple profile on Russian Cupid and you go to Russia, you go to Moscow for 2 weeks, you know. You rent an Airbnb or you stay at a friend's house for 2 weeks and you take the Moscow metro and you learn a little bit of Russian and you know, you try to fit in Russia, you try to become just a little bit more than just the average tourist, you're going to have a fantastic time because Russia is such a beautiful country, Moscow is such a beautiful city, and Russian women are just intoxicating. I mean, you're going to fall in love with them. It's going to come at a price, because they come with unholy amounts of drama. But actually, in my experience, that drama is unavoidable no matter where you go. And if you're really lucky, you're going to find a Russian girl who knows who she is, values herself for who she is, keeps herself feminine and beautiful, and understands what she wants in a man. And when you screw up, because you will screw up, she's going to tell you where you screwed up. And she's going to give you clear indications of what you need to fix. If you find a girl like that, hold on to her, because she's worth her weight in gold. especially if she's loyal to you. I mean, that's actually the first criterion. You find a loyal girl, everything else is negotiable. Loyalty on the part of a woman, that's special. I mean, obviously, a loyal woman who treats you like crap otherwise is awful, but a loyal woman who is kind to you most of the time, loves you, supports you, gives you what you want, gives you what you need, helps you to improve yourself, shows you where you're going wrong. That's a wonderful place to be. That's a wonderful relationship to be in. And it's only when you make a man out of yourself that you're going to experience the joys of something like that. So if that's what you want to do, if you want to go from not having a successful dating life to at least having a good woman in it, then you need to make a man out of yourself. And you need to meet women. And you need to do it the old-fashioned way. Get off the internet, stop looking at porn, stop wasting your time with mindless video games and Hollywood-driven, Netflix-driven bullshit entertainment. Get out there and live. And that's how you're going to become the kind of man who gets a high-quality woman. Okay? Let's say your resolution, is going to be hopeless, is to make more money. Well, again, like I said, you don't have a clue what you're talking about. But let's say your goal is to make $10,000 more a year than you did at the start of the year. Okay? And you're going to do that by starting up your own business. Okay, cool. Make a plan as to how you're going to do it. Keep your costs low. Keep your costs low. Keep your costs low. I can't repeat this enough because every great businessman who built a real business empire did it by keeping an eye on the bottom line. Donald Trump, his most illustrious, august, noble, benevolent, and legendary celestial majesty, the God Emperor of mankind, Donaldus Triumphus Magnus Astra, the first of his name, did it with that exact philosophy. That's how he made it happen. Charles Schwab, back in the day, I used products from Charles Schwab, the company. Charles Schwab, the man, created the company, Charles Schwab, by keeping costs as low as possible. And he was considered one of the most ruthless robber barons of the time. He wasn't really a robber baron. He wasn't. He created a bank that was immensely successful because he worried about costs. He rewarded people who came up with innovative solutions to cut costs. And he did it so well that his bank survived after him and has survived ever since without really any need for significant changes to that model. Anybody who has had the genuine pleasure, actually, it is a pleasure to talk to people from Schwab the bank, and Schwab the brokerage, institution, knows that these people are really good at their jobs. I have, in 10 years of dealing with Schwab customer service, never once have I ever had a bad experience. Not once. That is unheard of in banking. That's how the way it was achieved was by keeping costs down, rewarding people for good behavior, rewarding them for finding ways to improve the business. You don't even need to set up your own bank. You just need to set up a small business, or you just need to set up a small investing portfolio. If you're doing it by investing, then you need to know what you're investing in, and you need to come up with a strategy for investing. Either you invest in dividend-rich stocks, which will pay you back in the form of dividends, which will get taxed as basically income, but actually you may end up paying a lower tax rate on your dividends than you would on your regular paycheck. So why not? Go for it. You may decide to invest in growth stocks and just ride the market. Okay, I mean, fine, that's a possible strategy. Just accept that there might be risks with that. As long as you assess the risks and assess where you might be going wrong, at least you have a plan. All right? So, in the last few minutes of this podcast, I want to go over, as I said, my personal goals for 2020. I don't believe in resolutions. I believe in action. I believe in getting things done. So, my first goal is fitness related, because I spend an awful lot of my time talking about fitness, you know, fittingly enough, if you will, is to get back to the point where I can squat 315, deadlift 455. I was doing that 6 months ago. I was in Russia at the time, and I was able to do this. I hit 315 one night in a gym in Moscow, and immediately after that, I hit 455 on deadlifts. Great evening. I had a fantastic time. It's a great Saturday night. I was by myself. I didn't have to worry about anybody else. But, you know, I went to the sauna after that and I just felt fantastic. Now, 2 weeks after that, I threw out my back. And ever since then, I've only come anywhere close to that weight just once, you know, in the last 3 months. But that's okay. I mean, it's a marathon. It takes time to build up these things. My second goal is to get back into regular martial arts training, and that is tied into my third goal, which is to get the hell out of the old country and get back to civilization. Now, that might come in the form of going for more education, God help me, because I don't want to do that, but maybe it's necessary. I might have to just bite the bullet and go somewhere else and study for a year, pick up another degree, which would probably be useless. You know, it's just a foot in the door, but it's a degree. Go get it and get the work visa that comes off of that and just stay somewhere else and eventually earn my way towards permanent citizenship, permanent residency, and eventually citizenship, which is the ideal outcome, obviously. But all of that has to happen, you know, within the next year to 3 years, right? My next goal after that is to build up a proper pool of savings again, because the last few years have been very expensive. I mean, I built up a lot of savings before I had to leave the US, and I was very lucky in that when I moved back to the old country, a lot of my expenses were very low because I wasn't paying for rent anymore. I didn't have to deal with that aspect of things anymore. I didn't have to pay for my own food, really. I am living with relatives, and that's a good thing in a lot of ways because it keeps my costs low, but it's a terrible thing in a lot of other ways. I wouldn't wish that on anybody at my stage of life. It's a miserable experience in many, many ways. Your time and your efforts are not your own. And that means that when it comes time to getting married, which is the point I'm at now, where I'm seriously looking at the possibility of saying, you know, this relationship is worth committing to, because you can't have a committed relationship without a marriage. Let's just be clear about that. People who have been with their girlfriends for years and years will argue with me about this. Oh, we're in a committed relationship. No, you're not. You've not made a formal commitment to your woman. You've not said, I value you so much more than all other women, that I will make an oath to you in front of my parents, in front of my family, in front of your family, in front of our friends, in front of God Almighty, that you are the one for me. If you haven't done that, you're not in a committed relationship. You're not. You're in a relationship, but it's not committed. You still have other options in your mind, and so does she. The moment you put a ring on it, that's commitment. That's when it's official. So, I know I've thrown a hell of a lot at you guys. There's a lot to talk about. I mean, I could keep talking about this for hours, but ain't nobody got time for that shit. And I have to get up stupidly early tomorrow for a function, which it's for a relative of mine. He's a really cool guy. But waking up that early is just not fun. So I will sign off here. Please, if you have not subscribed already, so make sure you subscribe. Leave comments either here at SoundCloud or at the blog. And I will see you on the next one. This is Didact, and this has been Didactic Reach or Didactic Mind. Episode 11, New Year's Irresolutions. See you on the next one.